And roll thing. It never works. It's like I'm Twisted Sister or something like that. Hey, Twisted Sister. Welcome to the call sheet. I am Keith Coogan. I'm joined here by my friend Gabe Romero.
Hi, everybody. How
and
you doing?
A special guest tonight, a creator, a person that makes and creates and produces product or art. I don't know what you want to call it. This thing, and people pay to come see it.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's
and
wild.
It's funny, when people get close to their art, sometimes it's tough to make money at your art. You could paint, you could be a Van Gogh and, you know, have to cut something off and die.
And die, yeah.
Don't money forget, and be discovered.
Don't forget the death involved.
So we have Sasha Travis tonight.
Howdy, howdy.
She has directed a local theater piece. It's in NoHo. What's the theater?
It's at the El Portal Theater in North Hollywood. The piece is The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, based on the 1920 silent film.
Yes.
It is a menage of movement, dance, lighting, and theatrical emotion. Is there jazz hands? Are there any?
No, there's scary hands. Scary hands.
Trees.
Yeah.
Are there any anthropomorphisms? Are there animals and things?
Golly Moses. Maybe at the end, but I'm not going to give it away.
Ooh, crazy dream sequences and lots of crepe and things flying around.
That's the best part, the dream sequence.
You have an amazing, Sasha, thanks for coming tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Anyone who's a fan of Sasha Travis's work throughout the theater, from the South as well, she came from Texas and the South and to Georgia and through to L.A. now, and she has been doing these theater shows. What is the name of the theater company, Astral Dance Company?
Astral Dance Company is the one I'm working with right now, and I've been working with them for 2 years, Astral Dance, A-S-T-R-A, and they are amazing. I am one blessed little lady to get to work with such talented people. Yeah. I came out to L.A., though, to work with Cypher Arts Studios, and I still work with them, and then we all got together and started our own new company. We have a new space. And
how do you find how did you find the people, and is your cast made up of theater and core people, or do you audition when you do shows?
We audition for every show. We do have separate universes here. With the Astra Dance Company, we audition for every single show. We call ourselves a dance company. We're really more of a dance theater because we don't have a set. Like, these are the 9 people we cast everything out of. We hold auditions. And with something like Caligari, because we've done it twice now, we pull people from the same cast and move them into different pieces and different parts and then pull more people in. With Cypher Arts Studio, we do have a band of about 300 people that we just sort of figure out where we're going to put all of them.
It's a madhouse.
It's pretty wild. So
you also do the Festival of Jareth?
Labyrinth of Jareth.
Labyrinth of Jareth.
Ball.
I'm so Masquerade.
Yeah. Ball.
I was a Labyrinth fan as a kid.
Oh,
and as a 21-year-old stoner, I think I watched it like daily.
Well, how can you not? I mean, you know.
Take him away.
Well, you know,
please, Goblin King.
You take me, just take me.
How can the heroine right there, usually they save the kitten or save the puppy or save the, but she wants to wish him away to the goblin world.
Yeah.
How awful.
I know.
They're turning
meth,
convention
goes on
their
an 8-hour
ear.
Journey mm-hmm. and meets, Ludo.
Yeah.
Oh, hello. And of course, the great David Bowie.
Yes, so fabulous. Well, you know, in the Labyrinth movie, there's he makes the little masquerade ball inside the bubble.
Yeah.
And like blows the bubble away, and you see little masquerade ball, costumes dancing. Our summer show, is based on what happens in that bubble. So it's Labyrinth
wild.
Masquerade ball.
Mm. And don't you play different demons and archangels and creatures of the night?
Who doesn't?
Well, Sasha isn't just a creature of the night. Sasha is the queen of the night.
With my throngs of evil minions. Yes, I do. I have the pleasure of playing the queen of the night at the Labyrinth Ball. And kind of in life, sometimes it seems. You know, Sasha shows up and says no. And the whole room goes, okay, she said no. She said no. But
she does it in the nicest way.
I mean it. honey, bees.
It's not, no, you can't do it because I don't want you to. It's, no, you can't do it. And here are the 18,000 reasons why it won't work.
Here, come and talk to Tim. He will show you how. No, it's, I do. I get to play the Queen of the Night for the Labyrinth Ball, and it is magnificently fun. You know, we have 2,500 people come from all over the world for two nights of masquerading and dancing and drinking and extravaganzing, and I get to parade around with my, you know, 2-foot headdress and my black eyeballs, and people get out of my way.
Are the contacts comfortable?
Not at all.
Endure the pain.
We were shooting. You gotta like shove them up and shove them down, and then you just take a lot of Tylenol and pray.
We were shooting a video a few weeks, a month or so before the event went up, because they now do pre sort of teasers to kind of let people in, watch the videos. And I had to ask Sasha a question or something. I was directing this one in particular. And she comes out and she's in the eyeballs. And I'm like, can you see me? She's like, I can see about this much of you.
Well, it's true. The scleras, they block everything except like these little pinpoints right over your pupils. So you really have no peripheral vision whatsoever. So stares are terrifying.
How young were you when you got singing and into the four? How old were you?
Oh, young. Yes, very young. About... I think I gave my first performance on top of the flour canister in my kitchen when I was about 2. I announced to my parents' dinner party at the ripe old age of 4 that I would be a singing and dancing actor when I grew up. Thank you very much for coming tonight. It was apparently time for them to leave. And
is there a door? Did you?
I don't think I showed them out. Up. I was just, that's it. Good night. Here's my bow. I took a gigantic tumble when I was a podling and cut my face open. Here you have this massively awesome scar where I just busted it as a kid. Go to the hospital, screaming, crying, so much noise that, and I lived in New York City, so New York City, ER, middle of the night, poor mother, screaming child, covered in blood, and everyone in the emergency room apparently, I have no recollection of this, but everyone in the emergency room apparently stops because I'm screaming so loud, and my mother, in her terror that they're going to arrest her for child abuse, just kind of sets me down very gently, and I'm looking at her, and all these people are looking at me, so I do a little dance, because what else are you supposed to do when people look at you? So it's from day one, it's kind of in this way.
Some chilling, like, Japanese horror movie. It's just like the bleeding
little
dancing girl in the hospital.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my... Yeah, my poor mother. Oh.
So how did they help you out to do that? Did you, in school, I'm sure you studied, did you do extra stuff and study dance and singing and everything with private tutors and schools with other kids?
No, I was in public school forever and ever, you know, Texas, New York public school, PS 234, and then Texas public schools, and just did the dance and the acting on the side. I, you know, grew up in ballet forever and ever, and I actually took my first ballet class in over a decade yesterday.
Wow.
I'm so sore. So it was very funny. But yeah, I went to college for the first time, not for theater of any sort, and that didn't last very long.
What'd you study in college? What'd you go for?
I went to study college. You know, I went to college. So
I wanted to study.
I got a college. I majored in partying and minored in blackout drunk.
Tuesdays, yeah. Maybe some Thursdays.
Yeah, college. I don't know.
Class before 10.
No, actually, all my classes were at 8. I know. Oh, God. I was that kid, though. Like, I was going to college, thank you very much, and then got the hardcore bug and left college and ran around the country and did a bunch of tours and had a great time. And
with what? What were you touring with?
I toured with the Dallas Children's Theater. I played Anne Frank for a year on tour.
How did you keep quiet?
Was that a musical?
No, it was not a musical. Oh, okay. It was the saddest year of my life. You know, you go to Auschwitz 7-8 times a week, sometimes twice a day. It was a sad, sad time. But touring, awesome. Yeah, touring was great. I
How
highly
old
recommend
were you
it.
When
I,
you're doing, so you're...
I turned 21 on the tour. So that was awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah, knock down, drag out.
Did you get involved? How did you get started technical? How did you start getting behind and calling the shots in terms of directing, or how did you move into that? Did you art direct? Did you do the stage stuff? I was a techie, so I Like, I got my hands on all the equipment and played with all the toys.
It was lighting design. Like, I got into lighting design and learned the fine art of manipulation through lights and how you can change what everyone is thinking and they don't see it happening, but the whole audience, like, takes a breath. You know, like, everybody starts to itch around in their seat a little bit, but you don't see anything. I love lights. Lights are so sexy. So I got into lighting design and then really, really, really wanted to produce this one particular show in Georgia. And it was one of those things where I was like, okay, we have to do this show. We've got to do this show. We've got to find somebody who's going to produce and someone who's going to direct because I want to be in this show. And we couldn't really find anyone who wanted to produce or direct. So I was like, fine, fuck this shit. I'll produce it and direct it. And jumped in head first. I've never been one to do things lightly.
So that is a dramatic understatement.
So instead of just producing and directing a show, I started a theater company, opened a theater in like an old kind of somewhat abandoned train station. Yeah. You know, like here we're gonna, I want to do one show, just one show.
And why the train station? Just available space?
It was the cheapest thing I could find.
Did you use the train station as a location or did you do like Lear? What'd you do there?
Well, we did Neverwhere.
You did Neverwhere.
We did Crazy Face. We did a whole season there, and it actually is still standing and going. The theater, the theater is still up and running. It's awesome.
As a matter of fact, Sasha and I met doing a show. She was in school at the time, and they had an actor quit on them.
Oh my God, that's right.
It was a Friday night. I got the phone call from the director, and they said, "Hey, we had an actor quit on us. We're doing a show. He gave us your number to replace him." I was 20, and I must have been 23, 24 at the time. He was 60-something. And he gave them my number. And he's a psychiatrist. Like, the role was psychiatrist, you know, leading this group of whatever, mad, crazy, ridiculous people. And so I get the call. And I say, okay, sure. I'd be happy to take a look at the script. When does the show go up? Mind you, this call happens on a Friday. Monday night.
Yep.
excuse me?
Yep.
oh, it's okay. You've only got about 10 pages.
Oh, you've got that.
Well, 10 pages. Yeah, but you see, you hear that.
The actor's nightmare right there.
Well, and it's not, this isn't television where, okay, let's do another take. It's, you know, this is.
No, it was 10 pages of you talking.
Of me solid, like 10 pages of just me speaking. And
you were magnificent.
And I showed up, and that's where we met. And then when she moved over to the train station, which was the Savannah Actors Theater.
Yes.
And they did Crazy Face. We had done a couple of movies together in between. We did this film called Elixir, where I played a Nazi soldier sent to assassinate her. And she played a little homeless Jewish girl in Nazi Germany.
Always with these pitiful Jewish girl roles.
I know.
It's so sad.
It's weird.
So sad.
So then we like I said, we did a couple of films in between, and then we did the show Crazy Face, which was the very last show that I did before I moved from Savannah, Georgia to Los Angeles.
Oh, I loved that show.
And it was a great show. I played an old clown. And the way Sasha described it to me, and this was another case of we had somebody for this role. They flaked out on us. We open in a week and a half.
Please help me.
And she goes, "No, you can do this. We want someone who can capture supreme joy and all the tragic sadness in the world at the same time." I'm like, who do you think I am? Like, what?
I seem to recall saying something to the effect of, "Put the nose on and make them cry."
It's like, what are you doing to me?
And you were wonderful in that too.
I guess so. And that's where I was inspired. The production company that I run, Poor Fish Entertainment, is a steal from a line from that show.
Poor Fish.
Where the young man, talented actor named Christopher Heady, who played Teal Eulenspiegel,
good God.
He drags around a fish for the whole first act, and this is all based on the legend of Teal Eulenspiegel that Clive Barker heard and was mesmerized by and decided he wanted to write the show. But so he drags the fish around, and then at the end of the first act, they're assaulted by marauders and the fish is destroyed. So he holds up the string with the fish head and the entrails hanging down, and he looks at it, and he delivers the line, "Aw, poor fish." And this guy was just so brilliant because you laughed, but inside it was like, oh my God.
The whole world is tragic. Just falling apart. Poor fish. Poor stuffed puppet fish. It was so sad.
And then towards the end of the show, I give him a little fish. And it's like, oh, the world is better now.
Except it's not.
Because I get beheaded or something like that. I can't remember exactly how it ended.
Because it's Clive Barker, and the good guys might win, but you still want to vomit. I Columbia love it so much.
Or Janet.
Oh, Janet.
Yeah?
Okay. Well, my first professional show ever in my, like, podling days was Columbia. But then Janet every time after that.
How did you feel? I mean, being in theater and stuff, mm-hmm. It was... sometimes the kids are a little... faster in the fast lane than other kids. Was there any sexual tension doing Rocky Horror? I mean, was that, how old were you when you were doing Rocky Horror?
I am a Scorpio. So every day.
You communicate sexually.
Every day is sexual tension. There is no, I've never had like a sexual show tension, like, oh God, this is just so, it's the show and we're going to do the grown up because we're in the show together. No, it's just always there all the time. And with Janet, especially, I don't know, with any role, I kind of fall in love with the air every day. So anytime I go to a show of any kind,
I'm like... I just saw Psycho Eyes. That
yeah,
was great.
Was that exciting?
You were kind of like, hi, I won't hurt you. Don't worry.
Look out, am I hanging your fingers from the ceiling?
You don't need a restraining order. It's okay.
I fall in love with everybody all
were
the time.
Were you an only child?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I have the world's best sister. She's so patient. She's you know my sister.
I know Nissy.
Yeah, my sister actually just got married. Best wedding ever. It was like the 42nd. Hey, I love you. Want to get married? Sure, let's get married. Kissy, kissy. Okay, we're married. Let's have a party. Like, it was awesome. It was so cute. But no. Unfortunately, I'm going to say now. Unfortunately, no like backstage quickies. No, no, like let's jump under the table and do it real quick.
The Rocky Horror Picture Show out here in at the New Art in Santa Monica for oh God. Probably saw it 60, 80 times or something at least. And I'd go every Saturday night I could. I was like, oh, it's midnight. I'm going to go down and have fun. But it was, we were like all in band. Mm-hmm. We were kind of nerds. And it was like, we always thought the jocks and the like prep sosh girls were like having coke parties or something. I don't know. We always thought they just got together and like got naked and like had orgies. No, swear to God, we heard rumors.
Isn't that what everybody does?
We heard these, and we're like 14, 15. But when it came to Rocky Horror Picture Show, this was like, there's so much blatant sexuality in the movie.
Yeah.
You have Susan Sarandon running around in her underwear.
So hot.
Barry Bostwick running around in his underwear. Frankenfurter. I mean, the whole
thing. Running around in everyone's underwear.
Did you start as a Transylvanian, or did you jump right into the cast? How did you get involved with the cast? Did you guys do it in front of the show, or did you do just the stage show?
No, we did just the stage show, and I went to the Rocky Horror Show a lot when I was in like high school, just to go and see it, the movie one. But then I saw this ad in a paper, come audition for the Rocky Horror Show. I was like, oh, that'll be great with the movie and everything. And I get there, it's not with the movie, it's all by yourself. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And I got cast as Columbia and tap danced my little heart out. It was a lot of fun. And, oh, it was so silly and wonderful. And, actually, I worked solid for like 4 years after that. I didn't take a single break. It was like rehearsing while going. And that was, you know, ramping up to moving to Georgia. And so much fun. So yeah, love Rocky Horror. I would do it all the time. I actually got to play Janet in front of an audience of like 1,500 screaming people at one point. And it was like my rock star moment, you know? Everybody should have one.
there's an incredible memory I have. Oh my God,
over
I saw...
at the Frankenstein.
They did a rendition, they did Rocky Horror live at the Savannah Actors Theater about 4 years ago. And I got a call from a friend of mine who worked within the theater company, a guy who actually drove with me across country when I moved out to Los Angeles, called me up, said, we're doing a show, we want you to be in it. And so I book a flight, I head out there, I'm going to be in Georgia for 3 weeks, and I get there and they go, oh, yeah, we canceled that show, we're doing something else. But can you help us out? And I said, sure. And at the time, they were doing Rocky Horror Live. And this is in the train station, okay? And mind you, when we did Crazy Face, like the fire marshal kicked us out because we weren't properly zoned. We did the show in the parking lot.
In the rain.
In the rain. But so by that time, they'd gotten all of those issues resolved and they were doing Rocky Horror Live to standing room only seatings. Like there were, that theater probably sat, what, 75 people?
It was 99 squished.
It was, yeah. It was like they had squished seats
like,
for
like
75.
Like pillows on the floor.
But they were packed in there. And you had people coming to see the show for the third, fourth, fifth time.
We had somebody bring bags of rice and tell us that they couldn't pay for their tickets anymore, but they would bring rice if they could hand out the rice to the audience members. Can they please pay in rice? You know,
I got toast, I got toilet paper, a lighter, an umbrella, and some rice. Let me in.
Please let me in. I brought enough for the whole class.
I think we used to destroy the New Art. They would hang a sheet in front of the screen because we would still toss. And then at one point they were like, no more food. And we're like, okay, no more food. We got rats everywhere. You just can't throw food. We did no more food. We still had fire, open flames. And then one night they came and they said, no more open flames. So at that point people were waving their phones or had glow sticks or whatever it is that we could keep going
on.
You just kept getting shut down and then they made it not as regular as a thing. And I think occasionally they'll do it, but it was such a regular thing in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Back in the day.
Yeah. Last century.
I've never heard anyone say it that way.
Just get a crick right
there. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Semi-dance class yesterday.
I feel so old when
I'm going to be singing that all night
long. The 1990s? Wow.
So then when did you come out to Los Angeles?
I came to LA in 2008.
The year of our old 2008.
How's the bone machine been treating you? How do you like it?
How honest do we get to be on this here show?
Please, the more truth we can get.
The better?
Yeah.
I hate the traffic. I've never experienced anything like it in my whole life, but that's pretty bland. I really miss like the people like at the bank. I knew them. I knew who their kids were. I knew what their dogs were named. Like when I went to restaurants in Georgia or in Austin, like I knew people. I go to even just the same restaurant 2 or 3 weeks later, it's totally different people. So I really miss this like community feeling, which is why I'm so grateful for Cypher, for Astra, for these little communities that I've found within this gigantic place.
Your tribe.
You found your tribe. Yeah, my tribe. We're building our tribes.
Like a good Jewish girl.
Yeah. Sad. Always so sad. Yes, building my tribe. We're going to take
a little car. Get on the boxcar.
Get on the train.
Papers, no papers, boxcar. Old inside joke between an old friend of mine who played this Nazi German guard. Mm-hmm. And his line was, no papers, boxcar.
And what I hear, the lines from the play, Sau Juden. Stop, everybody, stop.
I'm a Catholic. We got our own guilt from back from being born. But yeah.
We get the guilt from being
born. And then Irish, we got enslaved, but it was mild. They sent us to Australia. We're like, this is okay. We're cool.
It's not too shabby in Australia.
It's nice.
Just hop everywhere.
Yeah. Sometimes I talk about politics. Sometimes we talk about media, entertainment, things you see on the news. So question, Amanda Bynes or Lindsay Lohan? Who's the better driver? I don't know. I was going to ask.
I have to ask you who at least one of those people actually is. And here I'm going to show my fear when I'm driving here. I'm like, oh my God, they talk about current things actually happen in the real world.
No, it's not the real world. It's a fabrication.
It's a pretend world.
Yeah, these people are distractions to true what's going on in life. And it is insane and idiotic.
Good. I don't know who
they
are.
Do you want that kind of attention? Do you ever want to be a star and be recognized and not be able to go to your market? You'll get a different community. You'll get total strangers that come up to you and say, hi, what's going on? And sign this. What do you, Just to be able to make more art? And
to be able to continue creating, with the people, especially with the tribe, how we're all working towards a common goal. That's the major thing. If anything that's fame-related ever happens, it's just scaring me to think about it. Anything fame-related ever happens. But I do want to be able to touch people's lives. And that's the thing about the show that I'm doing right now is it's so many people are coming to see it that I feel like it's touching this group of people that I would never have been able to reach before that.
It's tremendously reviewed. It's was on my radar before I even talked about to Gabe about you being on the show. And I was like, are you serious? That would be great. Because I my own background, it was like I did a lot of the theater stuff and the techie stuff. Sound, the lights, to the sets, the, you know, stage managing. Mm-hmm. And
In case you didn't hear, Sasha just purred.
Big shows, you know, like Say Anything or an Annie and Fiddler on the Roof. And we would move houses on stages nightly.
It's so great.
And loved the, I loved the Us Against Them. And them being the audience. This is the house. Mm-hmm. And the weeks leading up to the show, because your shows are so technical, do you bring that in earlier? Do you integrate that earlier? Work the movement of the play and then bring the tech in and kind of work that out?
Because of the way that my tribe operates, we're all up in each other's Kool-Aid all the time. So my digital scenographer, I live with him. So I can go to his room and be like, listen, we have to talk. Or he can come in and be like, hey, there's this one part that I don't get and we needed to go over this right now.
You just
blew
my mind. Digital scenographer?
Digital scenographer.
This is brilliant. They have...
instead of a Gobo and a...
Oh, we use Gobos.
Oh, okay.
No, they use all that stuff, but... Like, they did this for the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. They also did it for Eleonora, which was the last show that they did that was brilliant.
This one has more of
this
it,
This one
though,
does has like... much more. They have screens on stage, and they project the scene.
So all of these pictures that you see, like all of the backgrounds, that's all projected.
It's all projections, and they have two screens. They have one huge screen on stage at all times. Then they have two screens that come down from the flies, and then they also have two more screens up in what was, I guess, the old
organ lofts.
Yeah, the old organ lofts.
Hey, that was the sound of my tech Woody. Flies.
I can't hear you over the sound of my raging erection.
It's the brilliant thing about it is because, of course, Caligari was a silent film, so the dialogue is projected on the two screens in the old organ lofts.
We have five projectors in this show, and the monster 12K, and then the other ones that are the title cards, and then the different individual scenes, like when you go into someone's house or when you go into the graveyard, that sort of thing. But when I sat down with the film and transmogrified it for stage so that it would work in my mind, and then handed that over to everybody else and said, okay, please help me fix this. Of course, the digital scenographer is like, I'm sorry, you want five projectors? And they all have to go at the same time. I was like, yeah, can't you just like put a DVD and do it? And the guy was like, oh my God, you want what? So here I've asked for this, and I think it's perfectly logical. I don't know that this isn't possible. So my brilliant partner and roommate, Timothy Lamb, whom we call it Timgineering, he went out and builds from scratch the computer that does all of this, and he wrote the program that controls all five machines at the same time.
Slaves master kind of like it's
beautiful.
Just amazing, this guy.
Beautiful. Genius.
Is it integrated with lighting, or is the audiovisual separate from lighting, or
separate right now. However, at this last table read that we were doing of it, he was like, we could totally program the lights to go into this box. I'm like, what can this box not do? This box. Oh, and the sound is integrated into it. The sound is all in the box. So the only thing that's not in the box is the lights.
Do you film the shows?
Absolutely.
Do you film them to be aesthetically pleasing, or do you film them as a documentary for what you've done?
Both. We've had so much beautiful film and pictures come out of this particular run. We're running 4 weeks this time instead of two, which is just magical. And we've had photographers and then film people come out. We've done the one filming where they just set the cameras up in different places and then you just watch it. But then we did for lack of a better word, like a film call, where we picked certain scenes that we wanted them to get up close and personal, so the dancers would do the same thing 25 times and the guy would walk around and get the different shots and lay down on the stage and roll over. It was very exciting.
He had another one.
That was exciting.
Are you sold out for the rest of the run?
No, we are not sold out for the rest of the run.
The tickets are at the ElPortalTheater.com. Mm-hmm. It's at 5269 Lancashire Boulevard in NoHo.
Beautiful
ElPortal
Theater.
It's you can call 866-811-4111. That's 866-811-4, and then I'll just keep hitting one until someone picks up and sells you tickets to
Dr. And eventually they will, or you'll
Caligari.
Call India.
Huge hit on with now. Whenever someone gives me, and I see their website, and your website looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
The modeling pictures and the costumes and the, and you don't look like yourself. I mean, no, truly I modeling don't, like actually. You. Mm-hmm. Like your colored hair and
no, I never look like myself.
No, really, that is all you on the.
That's all me. Like at least on this, the Sasha Travis website. Yes, on the Dr. Caligari website. There's lots of people on that
Sasha Travis website.
But no, on the, that's all me. And yeah, I like to play dress up. And sometimes when I play dress up, there's people with cameras.
When someone puts something in there about or their own little biography on something, yeah, one thing struck out at me, which is. I'd never heard anyone emphasize this as much, and it's important, balancing.
Oh,
and balancing the storytelling with the audience experience with the business of it. How do you
so
make
important.
Money of it? When do you, how do you set prices? How do you do press? How do you get, you know, people to come? And how do you make a success like this happen? Is it trial and error? Have you, do you have a formula? Do you have a group of people you work with that do these things, or it's, do you take on the whole...
Oh, I don't take on the... I wish I could say that I did. I'm not that smart. As a director, I have discovered that what I should do is surround myself with people who are better than me at everything except, like, holding down the fort. And I have a brilliant team. Brilliant team. My partner in crime in all things, his name is Sean, and he's definitely... He does all of the web stuff. He does all of this artwork, all of the marketing, all of the reaching out to the press and bringing the right people in. And he has... away with words that, like, I love to go to meetings with him because I just feel like I should take notes. The way that he talks to people,
does
it's
it
just
feel
so
bigger
like,
or other than a regular person? Like you're reading this that's coming from the fount of.
He has a direct connection to heaven.
Okay,
like it's coming out of the top of his head. It's a gold string. It goes straight up to the sky. I see it all the time. And there, it's funny because I'll go into the office. I'm like, hey, baby. Oh, you're talking to God. I better go. You know, like he just has this. Gift. He has such a gift. And then,
how is it like for you as a director? You see everybody on stage has that golden thread.
Oh, absolutely.
And
they have
to
connect to
each
other.
Are you the traffic cop? Do you have an incredibly clear vision? Do you work with what's going on? And how do you direct?
I have a roadmap. It's not like a traffic cop kind of thing. It's more of a, I don't know, how do I direct? You've worked with me before. I have a very clear aesthetic and like an essence that I want to drag out of everybody. And I want them to be horrendously emotionally available.
Do you manipulate them or do you are you on the level with them?
Oh, both. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, actors are actors.
Speaking as an actor who has worked for Sasha, my experience on this side of it was, it's interesting you use the traffic cop analogy. I'd say she's more like kind of a Garmin, like she gives you directions as, you know, head in this direction, maybe head, only not quite as specific as a Garmin.
Recalculating.
You know, sometimes she'll come up to you and go, you missed the turn. Turn, damn it, turn. You know? but mostly it's just, you know, try this path.
I want people to get there on their own. I want people to arrive.
Their own.
Exactly. I want them to arrive in the exact spot I need them to be in for the purpose of telling the tale, but I want them to figure out how to get there by themselves. And whether that involves cajoling, begging, pleading, beating, I mean, it's different for every single person. And this is a big cast. This is 16 people. It's not the biggest crowd. I mean, my LOJ crowd, my Labyrinth Ball, there's hundreds of them, and it's each one is a different kind of puppet show. But with these kids, they're so kids. With these actors, they're all my children. They're all my kids. With these dancers, they're each so different in where they come from. It's been interesting because there's 1,000 different ways to say everything, but there's only one way that every person hears a thing. So I can say head stage right and do a turn all day long, but if that's not what they need to hear, if they need to hear while you're moving through the forest, I need you to really ponder what's just happened to your best friend and end up down here where the rocks are when you have your moment. If that's what they need to hear, then that's what I need to figure out to be able to get them to go stage right into a turn.
You've been in that groove, you know, you know, technical and the art. And I always call it the 1%. I used to always call it 99% and 1%. This is way before Occupy Wall Street.
But you're ahead of your time.
Some acting coach, I think it was Dennis Kelly Workshop, he said, you are 99% underwater. You take the character and you go boom under the water, but you leave the periscope up. Mm-hmm. And that's watching your mark. and your timing and your tech and your, you know, the other people on stage.
Yeah, you got to be aware.
Yeah, my line, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I wanted to go back to something, though, because you brought it up and we've touched on it a couple of times, but the balance of business and art, because you've got LOJ, which literally thousands of people.
Well, go back to the train station.
And
what did you, how much was that space and what did you charge for tickets for shows?
Well, that space was kind of a miracle.
You don't have to give me a dollar.
So it was kind of a miracle. We had a.
Wasn't zoned.
We did nothing right, first of all. We were a group of kids who wanted to put on a show and then decided to open a theater. And, we didn't have anything right. We didn't have the zoning right. We didn't know where we were allowed to park cars. We didn't know that we couldn't put certain things in certain places. We didn't know number of humans in building to number of bathrooms.
Did you incorporate? Was there insurance?
There was eventually. We did not start there.
At what point do you cross the line of legit? Because that's how you can. Yep. The only way you can make money is...
Go legit.
Is because, you know, as soon as you start making money, people want that the fire marshal wants to cut. Everyone is like, wait a second, the unions talk to you, the music rights, all that other stuff. People come, if you get attention and make a business at it, they're like, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
Are you using any of our pieces?
It was exciting, to say the least.
Pretty original shows that you do.
We did a lot of original work. Even like we had a one act play festival and featured original work like local to Savannah, Georgia, and then
brilliant show that Sasha wrote was put up there.
That was a tough fucking show. Thank you for saying that.
Sorry,
it's okay. It got picked up and done by a company in Atlanta.
Fantastic.
And I was actually chatting with someone up in New York who wanted to do it, but then they left their job at that theater, and that was my one contact. I was like, oh, well, that's okay. Good God, that show. But we did not do any of the things right. But then after we kind of got our asses handed to us by, well, sorry, you don't have any of the right stuff, so you have to do your show in the parking lot, and it's 12 degrees outside and raining, and, you know, we... pulled the actors together and said, okay,
God
guys.
Love the audience. They stood out there with us.
They did. They people came and the actors, they were so sweet. They were like, we're doing the show anyway. I was like, okay, we're going to do it. And we did it in the rain and the people and our off stages were the cars. Like people would go get in a car and go huddle in the car. It was so awesome. After that, yes, we had to go. We went 501 and we had to get all the right paperwork and all the right, and we got it all in gear. Good God. And it was an adventure. But
so then
you know,
you do that. And that is ultimately like to do the business end. You got to do that. You got to go nonprofit.
Well, you don't have to go nonprofit, but you have to decide what your, because I don't work for nonprofits here. None of the companies I work with here are nonprofit. You have to decide what your path is and which direction you want to go in. And the thing for me that from the moment I moved here, I knew I needed was my own space again. Like, in Georgia, I had my own space, and we raised all the money in the world, at least to a bunch of kids in Georgia, it was all the money in the world, and we managed to hold this place down, and so then I moved to LA, and everything's 25 times more expensive here, and I was like, well, we gotta have our own space, though, and as of this year, we have our own space in North Hollywood now.
It's beautiful. They have a dance floor, they have a shop where they build, they have a costume shop. It's a
chemical shop.
It's incredible.
Very exciting. You have to come and visit. It's beautiful.
That sounds like
it's
a playground.
It is a playground.
It's insane.
I was there all day today.
Yeah.
With no air conditioning right now.
The cabinet of Dr. Caligari at the Old Portal Theater runs, has been running since September 7th. It goes through October 6th. Mm-hmm. Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. General tickets are $20. 866-811-4111 for the box office, and it's at El Portal Theater, spelled all fancy and like
with an E in
theater.
Theatre.com.
By the way, while we're throwing out phone numbers, we should mention that if somebody listening would like to call in and talk, we have a phone number that they can call and talk to us and Sasha.
Yeah, you want to ask a question to Sasha? It's
800-9-8 You do it. It's bigger up.
800-893-9562.
I looked at my paper. I was like,
that number
crap,
again.
800-893-9562.
If you're listening live, go ahead. Follow that impulse. Pick up your phone and dial 800-893-9562. Thanks for listening.
That was your sexy
So we have about 15 or so minutes left Whoa. With Sasha Travis. I know it went like
so
smoking,
nice
didn't
to
it?
Let me just jabber fast? My head off. Thank you. So exciting.
Well, now you open the show and I've seen directors that sit there and pour over every night, and the show's running right now as we speak.
No, actually, we're dark this weekend. Smokey Robinson is at the El Portal this weekend.
Okay.
So we took the one weekend off, and so it was perfect. Then Gabe was like, I have this one thing. It's like, yes. Thank you so much for having me.
What's next for the company and for your shows? What do you have in mind? Do you even know? Are you done with this baby yet? Or
I'm not done. I want to run this show forever.
Do you tour it? Do you stay at home?
I would love to take it to San Francisco and San Diego first and kind of see how it does. And then maybe take it to like Dallas, Atlanta, and just sort of see. I mean, New Orleans would probably receive this really well in like a year or so. But it's like, I think the show has so much meat. I think it's such an interesting production. I've never seen anything like it. I do have the same style of transmogrification in the works for Metropolis, The Passion of St. Joan, and a couple of other old silent films that I'm psycho about.
She does Murnau's Sunrise and four audience members killed themselves. These are great influences. And is it because it is public domain or?
Yes.
I love you.
See, that's the thing people don't realize. Like, you have to, when Smart. You're creating, whether it's a film, whether it's a television show, whether it's theater, you have to figure out, okay, if I'm working from source material, mm-hmm. where do I get it? How can I get it cheap? What is, because...
Shakespeare.
And do something interesting. And something really Absolutely. Different. And when about a year ago, we hit on silent film. We were like, oh my gosh, I've never seen anything like this. And I'm psychotically in love with people painted anything, but I wanted... one of my major things was I wanted the audience that... Not the audience. Well, they could get painted too. But I wanted the dancers to be painted black and white from head to toe. So everything had to be black and white. The costumes are black and white. The sets are black and white. Everything's black and white. God damn it, it's a black and white film. And then, of course, we have to talk with creative. Well, they were actually tinted films, so fine. But the vision overall is black and white. God damn it. But but I love the paint and the integrating all the little details together to make the show. And we really hit on this silent film thing. And it was like, okay, all of the creepy that I love, all of the psycho and all of the fun and all of the passion and all of the melodrama like that you get with silent film. And it's so fun. It's so fun to do
faces
that kind of
really,
work.
And eyes really
Big
did
time.
Tell the story.
Big time. And do you know how fun it is to work with people who are completely dancer trained?
Like and pantomime or...
To get them into the realm of using their faces. And telling the story from here to here as well as all of this beautiful stuff going on. Because so many dancers are trained, you don't really have much of a face. You have a beautiful body telling a story, but not a lot. Take it, Mike. But not a lot, like, right here.
That's why I love, like, mask theater, too.
Oh, you see I love
theater
mask
where they
theater.
Wear the masks. And...
I work with a dance troupe that is entirely masked, actually. And all the stories they tell are only body work. They're beautiful.
So. Hot latex masks. Very sexy. Oh, I'm sorry.
Come to my workshop. We'll cast your head. You can have your own line of masks that look just like you.
We might have to do that. We might have to head up to the space.
It's so fun.
It's incredible. And I'm interested to see because Cypher is this continually evolving, continually growing organism. It's not just, a group of people doing something because it's a business. It's very much a living entity. Mm-hmm. And so I haven't seen the space probably since July, right after. And so I can only imagine the changes that have gone on there since.
It's different. One of the things I love about Cypher is that when I joined up, I thought, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? How am I going to fit in? This group of people that's been working together for 14 years, where do I fit? Like, thank you for bringing me into the family. But and their whole thing is, hey, what do you do? How can we work that into us? And so it really has been awesome. People come to the studio and you say, okay, who are you? What do you want to do? And they're like, well, I've always been interested in mask molding, but I don't really know how. Or like, oh, you know what? We have a group that does that on Tuesdays. Come on Tuesdays and see what happens. And then that person turns out to be this beautiful mold maker. And then we find, okay, so that's great. So now you're going to make these three molds for the show in June, the Labyrinth Ball in June. And that's your goal for this year. And it's like, that's how we have this family of 300 people who are all working their butts off because they're learning and they're getting to do what they're crazy passionate about. And so many people move to LA to pursue the dream of building something that's going to last and making something that's forever and ever and ever and artistic and crazy and wild. And then you get here and it's like, ah, we'll fix it in post. And,
what's a day in the life of Sasha Travis like? It's 2 days before a show opening. What are you doing? What's your life?
Well, we haven't slept in 3 days. If it's 2 days before the show is opening, it's about 3 days of no sleep at that point. So, oh my goodness. Well, I eat yogurt.
You wake up and eat some yogurt?
Yeah, okay. Wake up and eat some yogurt. But there's no waking up because we generally do work round the clock, which is, you know, of course, Gabe's been there. We fall asleep at our workstation.
Does that create that tribe kind of connection that...
I think it does because
everybody's... relationships that are very carny, very carnival, very...
Well, and there's definitely something to be said, and you see it gypsy. You see it in a lot of different things, especially in theater, especially in, I think, in like indie features. The work energizes you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need as much sleep.
It's mana. It's prana.
Yeah.
You're
energized
by... Those gold strings.
Yeah, you're energized by that creative energy inside you. I have this thing I have to accomplish. It doesn't matter if I don't sleep for a week.
And for us, it's like I have this thing that I have to accomplish or my whole life will end. Like it has to be done by Friday. There are no options.
There's no world outside of that. There's the stakes.
That's all there
is.
This
is the highest
stakes
right now.
This is it. That's all there is right now. And it's the most magnificent thing ever. And I'm so blessed that I haven't really been out of that mindset for about 2.5 years now. It's been go, 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 go. And it does. Like you get up and this project moves you into the next project and it all has to be done at a certain time. And there is no option of not being ready. Like there is no, oh, well, that part didn't get done, so I guess we're just not going to use it this time. It's like, no, it's fucking getting done and it's going to be brilliant. And there's nothing but excellence.
So how do you do that? How do you dole your time out between all those things that need attention and pushing?
His name is Ryan.
My line producer's name is Ryan Omega.
And, I call him the bitch.
No. He calls me the bitch.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. His job is to make sure that we all do the things that we need to do to make sure that it happens. And I'm so grateful for him. But again, this is a big tribe. I mean, for Caligari, we have myself, I'm the director. We have two executive producer, artistic director types. Then we have the producer, marketing director, like... genius that kind of glues it all together guy, and then the scenographers and the set designers and the stage management and the choreographers. Nichelle Bain is my choreographer. Chandra Rotig Shanzi is the assistant choreographer. And it's this tribe of people who are all chomping at the bit to make this the best thing that's ever happened. And it's always that way with Cypher. Mm-hmm. Always. So
then you get the house in and the payoff. And what's it like on opening night? What's it like, that feeling?
Oh, I thought you meant like I get to have a nice house. I was like, I don't even have my door key.
Those people you do the show for, that audience.
Yes, the audience comes. And it's so neat. There's this one moment on opening night when the bad guy comes on stage for the first time. And I was sitting way up in the back and the whole audience moved back like 2 inches. I was like, it's working. You know, that moment of like, okay, and for me, like, once the show is open, it's out of my hands. I can't be backstage going, fuck yo, do it this way. Like, it's all I can do is drink and worry, really. So I watch it, and with this show, this magical thing has happened where I'm just watching a show. Like, I'm enjoying myself, and that's...
You put it all in there. There's nothing to stress about.
It's all there.
You could.
That old transition.
The curtain goes up. And do you take notes? Do you watch and take notes and stuff? Or do you literally slip into it and can just enjoy the show?
Suspension of disbelief comes in and I'm experiencing the existence that they are. If something stands out, like if somebody's like, oh, guys, you didn't bring the door on. This whole scene is about a door and there's no door. Then yeah, I'm going to notice that, you know? Or if a dancer is like a minute and a half late and it's like, well, yeah, did you have to have a cigarette right then? Because I'll kick you. So it's, you know, it's, of course there's things that you're going to notice, but for the most part, with this one, especially with this incredible team, I don't have worries. It's very cool to just sit and watch it. And it is an interesting show. I've really never seen anything like it. I hate to keep saying that. I sound like super egotistical, crazy person, but...
Well, I don't think so. It's for starters, it is. It legitimately is unique. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's narcissistic because, yes, you're the director, but you built the team.
Oh,
God. The team does the work.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't...
And, you guide them. You give them the vision. You tell them what you're expecting.
Do you feel... I'm sorry, Gabe.
No.
Do you feel that because you sing and dance that you can show them? How do you direct?
No. I can't. I'm pitiful compared to these people.
I'd be so much fucking better in this role than you, bitch.
No. There have been moments in the show, I don't get up and show them. I talk them through. I ask them questions. I do a lot more question asking than telling, too. I'm much of a question
person.
You
ever jump in your own shows or you just direct?
Oh, no. I get to be in the Labyrinth show. Yeah. I get to be the Queen of the Night
do
in the Labyrinth show.
Do you work on other people's costumes and design them as well as your own?
Not.
Is that fabricated at Cypher?
It's all made at Cypher, but not much anymore. Or it's made through the Cypher Art Studio. Like we have people will take pieces and take it home and bring it back. But I'm so busy putting up the show that if I get to sew on anything, it's kind of a miracle.
But didn't Labyrinth have a festival Labyrinth? What do you call it? LOJ Labyrinth.
Yeah, Labyrinth.
Didn't it grow from a small, pretty small space? Where was it before?
The very first time it was done, it was like 150 people. And in San Diego, I think it's called the Abbey, maybe is what where it was okay. held at the Abbey. I wasn't on the team at that time. I joined it when it was over at the Henry Fonda, the music
box. Was it the Henry Fonda? Okay.
It was at the Henry Fonda. Yeah. And then it just got too big. We just outgrew the Henry Fonda and we moved to the beautiful Park Plaza. It's so beautiful.
Well, we were talking about that this afternoon because going back again to the business of it is the decision-making process to move from a venue that Henry Fonda holds, what, maybe 500, maybe 1,000?
No, you can squeeze 1,200 people in there, but it's painful.
Yeah, and so, but still, at the max, that's 1,200.
Ugh.
At the Park Plaza,
it's 2,500 people.
It's more than double.
Yeah.
So how do you make that decision? How do you run the risk of going, okay, well, we're in the Fonda, and at 1,000... we're packed and everybody feels like we're packed.
Well, it starts with a big fight. There are three of us who run Labyrinth together, Timothy, Sean, and myself. And it's Sean's baby. Sean Strider started it a bazillion years ago. It's his brainchild. It's his baby. And we all look to him as he's the gold strings connected to God. And we all go, what do you want and how can we make it happen for you? And it started with, you couldn't get through the Henry Fonda. You couldn't, like, you were elbowing your way through. And, you know, people come in costumes that have taken them 2 years to make. So these pieces that are probably worth more than my car are walking around getting squashed and cigarette burns and, like, I felt so bad for the costumes our last year at the Fonda. And nothing against the Fonda. The Fonda is a great, beautiful place. It was just not big enough for the size that we had grown to. And we moved to the Park Plaza and there was all this breathing.
This last year,
when you walk in and there's this stairwell to go up and then you go to the right and you get into the ballroom and the columns and the space.
And they take up the entire park.
Yeah, we take up the whole building.
Huge. There was a woman this year.
Is there an angel room, a demon room?
No,
not quite. But there was a woman this year.
Archangels to the left.
There was a woman this year who came who had built herself a pair of wings 15 feet across.
Oh, she's
wingspan,
amazing. She's phenomenal.
15 feet. She built them from scratch.
Her name is Rebecca.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing.
And
she's amazing.
Like, I can only imagine trying to give that and fit that into the Park Plaza. Or fit
Henry
that
Fonda.
Into the Fonda.
People, it's like the you walk into the Park Plaza and I don't know, the ceiling is like 200 feet in the air or something ridiculous like that. And it's like the sky is the limit with what we can do in there. And you were joking about archangels here, but we do. Like, this is, the goblins live outside. The elves live in the garden. The Court of Night lives up in the terrace room because it looks like a church. And, you know, it's like the Court of Cypher kind of takes over all of it. But we do have these little factions. dimensions, these little separate worlds that take place. And people interact that way. Like, they want to go there to be an elf of Anhavia. You know, they want to go there and they know these characters. And it's so amazing. And it was actually really sweet. One of my leading elves, someone walked up to her and was...
My leading elf.
Someone walked up to her and was speaking in Elvish, you know, Tolkien Elvish. And she says, "I'm sorry, I'm practicing my English." It was so well done. I was so proud of her because the look of panic happens. "I'm sorry, I'm practicing my English right now." But it's there's nothing like it. Labyrinth of Jareth is another one of those. There is nothing like it. Please come every summer. It's so magical. And it's an experience. And that's something even with Caligari that we try to do. We call it immersion theater because it's all around you all the time. Not as kind of bombastic and in your face as the Renaissance Fair, but it's that same kind of once you're in the world, there's no escaping till you leave the building. So there's nowhere to hide.
You like getting them in a dark theater. And
I can't help it.
Bringing things on them. Look behind you.
Yeah. No, don't look behind you because the bad guy's there, but you can't see him yet.
Well, congratulations. Thank you. I love that you're doing other shows that are inspired by silent film.
Thank you.
That is really cool.
Too.
And I think that's a cool thing that you've struck on. Because filmists should come.
I'm hoping Metropolis. Mm-hmm. Hope Metropolis. Mm-hmm. I love Metropolis.
That'd be a great show.
And also because they love.
And do you have any open roles?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Come audition, dude. I tell everyone. I'm going to tell you the same thing I tell everyone. I'll tell you the same thing I tell my fiance. You can audition for me anytime. Anytime. Yeah, I love auditions because I feel like this is my own private talent show. Everybody comes in and does their very best thing, and I just clap, and I love auditions. It's so great.
Well, sure, because you sit on that side of the table.
Abso-fucking-lutely. You bet your buttons.
Yeah, it is dramatically different on that side of the table.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I already fought for my job. So... Oh, man. Well, thank you for having me.
You have great power over this tribe. And they love you because they're doing great work with you and for you.
I love you.
Thank you for coming.
Them.
Thank you, Gabe, for having Sasha come on out.
This is so nice.
Thank you to the audience out there for listening to The Call Sheet and Sasha Travis. And please go see Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Two more weekends.
Two more weekends to see it. And listen in... next weekend, I might not have a show. We're doing the Waltons' 40th anniversary show. I'm going to be doing some red carpet interviews and be at the anniversary show. Weekend after that, I'm going to try to drag as many Waltons as I can to the show. So if you're listening 2 weeks from tonight, I might have some John Boys and such on. Thank you so much. I am Keith Coogan. We had Gabe Romero.
Hooray!
Thanks, Gabe, for coming on again. And Sasha Travis.
Hooray!
The amazing Sasha Travis.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so grateful. This was really fun.
You worked very, very hard for it. And now, when you go to the market, they're going to go, "Oh my God, there she is!" Yeah. She physically just visibly blushed in front of me. This is awesome. I'm Keith Coogan. Thanks for listening to The Call Sheet. We'll see you guys again. Take care of everybody. Take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. And produce, create, do it, love it.
Make it happen.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Say the Pacific. Ah, fuck. I hate my voice. Fuck. Hate it. Jesus Christ. I hate this shit. Oh, man. Do you guys like talking to me and hearing my voice? Because I would fucking hate it.
Stop right.
Let's try it again. That's not right, right? Yeah. Let me try it again. Please listen Pacific time. Hi, this is Vince. Listen. Fuck. Everybody's looking at me and shit. You guys are probably noticing how fat I am right now. You're like, man, how sweaty I am. Hi, this is, you're listening to the wrap-up show with Gary Jabate and John Hine on Howard 101.
Hey, this is Vince. Listen to the More Music Radio Pod every Thursday night, 10 p.m. to midnight Pacific time on SkidRowStudios.com. Fuck your mama.
You're listening to SkidRowStudios.com. This is Keith Coogan. Tune into the call sheet Saturday nights, 8 to 9 p.m., and I promise to sound like I'm always on Quaaludes.
Immigration. There's too many people in this fucking country. But I think if you're going to focus on keeping people out, you're going to focus on the people who don't contribute to society. That's a no-brainer, but and there's a specific group of over 4 million people that come into this country every year and don't contribute a fucking thing, and everyone knows who I'm talking about, but no one wants to say it because it's politically incorrect. But fuck that. You know who I'm talking about? Officer Bob? You know who I'm talking about? Who am I talking... Babies! That's who I'm talking about! Babies! They come out of your hole, they come into this country, they don't speak the language, they don't want to work, they just take, and they cause a ruckus, and they waste all of our natural resources. I say, put the Border Patrol agent at the foot of your uterus. Anything that comes out without a visa, you kick it back in the hole. What's your name? You're not on the list. Get back behind the velvet rope. The club is over full. We'll call you when we need you. Sick the amount of people. Oh, Doug, don't you do an anti-baby bit on every CD? Yes, because you won't stop having them, so I'm going to keep saying it.
Let's say anything they want, you see, and you'll follow them, because we are the docile masses. We're the puppet people. Put it on our TV, it's true. Put it on our TV, it's true. We're the puppet people. Hey, guide us, you fucking scum. Hey, we're the puppet people. And we are. What are you gonna do? That is why I believe the media is the ultimate enemy of all time. Hate it, hate every bit of it. Live out in Los Angeles, which I call Satan's shithole. Thank you. I feel rather strongly about the place. And the sooner it falls into the ocean due to a major earthquake, the better this world will be. As soon as it is flushed away like the turd it is into the Pacific Ocean, with all that's left floating on the sea are tanning booths like coffins and Charlton Heston's toupee, the world will be a better place. I believe. Horrible place, L.A. Always hot and sunny. That's why I love this weather. It's cool, because it's weather. It's actual fucking weather. Winter, cold, I'm with you. I'm following this whole thing. In L.A. right now, 85 and sunny. I called today. What's it like? It's hot and sunny. Every day, it's hot and fucking sunny. Isn't it great? What are you, a fucking lizard? Only reptiles feel this way about this weather. I'm a mammal. I can afford scarves and coats and cappuccino and rosy-cheeked women, and all of them are available on the streets of Crowley right now. Crowley. I went through there today. Amazing. Right over that bridge. The tooth count lowers, the eyes close. And... fuck. Thumbs are withdrawing. My God, it's like a time capsule. I don't know. LA is a horrible place. Home of the pedestrian right-of-way law. You know what this law is? This is in LA. Pedestrian right-of-way law. This law is if a pedestrian decides to cross the road anywhere on the road at any time he wants, steps in the fucking road. Every car has to stop and let this pedestrian, this box turtle of a human, cross the fucking road. It's a stupid law. How many of y'all wondered like I did during the LA riots when those people were being pulled out of their trucks and beaten half to death? How many of y'all wondered like I did? Step on the fucking gas, man. They're on foot, you're in a truck. think I see a way out of this. That pedestrian right-of-way law. Every one of these people coming home from work, gang of youth, stepped in front of their car, Molotov cocktails, clubs in hand. Every one of these idiots. I guarantee you that Reginald Denny, that truck driver, never gonna stop again as long as he fucking lives. It can be an old woman with a baby carriage crossing the road. He's gonna be going, tried stopping once, didn't work out too well for me. Yeah, I'll take the $25 ticket over the 2,500 stitches I had in my left fucking cheek. Well, Reginald, at least you stopped. That was nice. Fuck them. Never again. Tighten this car. Fuck it. I'm going out there. I'm filling that motherfucker to the top with petrol and we're gonna ride this country to the death. Well, I bet Reginald's an exemplary employee right now as a trucker, man. I bet his boss is thrilled with him. Fuck, Reginald's here again. He's early again. Man, it's like he's not stopping or anything. He's unbelievable. I'd love to give him a raise, but every time I run up to the cab with money, he starts backing off. Just seems a little skittish. True story. I was here during the riots. That was weird. That's the last time I was here. This time is an election. Last time, a riot. I came over the day the riots happened, too. That was what was so weird about it. I left L.A. Bye, Bill. Enjoy England. I will. Y'all have fun when I'm gone. We will, Bill. Bye. Bye. See you. Landed Heathrow Airport 11 hours later, pass a newspaper stand, L.A. burns to ground. Shit, did I leave a cigarette lit? How much are these? Let's see if my picture's in here. Right? And I'm over here trying to get news of the riots, right? You got four channels, all four are playing snooker for no fucking apparent reason. What is this, different angles of the table?
For north-south coverage of snooker, turn to BBC Two. For east-west coverage of snooker, turn to BBC One. For the overhead view, turn to BBC Three. For a look under Jimmy White's left arm, turn to Channel Four.
You're gone, Doc. How much longer are you going to continue that impression, Bill? Any more in the act? Who is this guy, Jimmy White? Last time I was here, riots, I turn on TV, there's snooker Jimmy White. 9 months earlier, the last thing I saw when I left the hotel room, turned the TV off before I did, what's that? Jimmy fucking White. Does this guy have a bad home life or something? Let's get him home. Let's iron that vest. I mean, I like snooker, don't get me wrong, you know. I think it's a little slow, you know. Perhaps could use some livening up. You know what snooker could use? Riot. That'd be cool. Cues hitting. I figured out why it's so long, man. It's because this little fucking old guy, not the two players, this little old guy keeps taking the balls out of the pockets and putting them back on. Hey, you asshole, he got it in. Let's go. Game's almost over and he has to come over again. Man, this is going to take all fucking night. So I'm trying to get news of the riots. Nothing but snooker on, right? And all my friends here are trying to sympathize with me. Oh, Bill, crime is horrible. If it's any consolation, Bill, crime is horrible here too. Shut up. This is Hobbiton, and I'm Bilbo Hicks, okay? You live in a fairyland. Fucking crime. I was reading the papers here. You have crime like, yesterday, some hooligans knocked over a dustbin in Shaftesbury. The hooligans are loose. What if they become ruffians? I would hate to be a dustbin in Shaftesbury tonight. No one knows what it's like to be a dustbin in Shaftesbury with hooligans. It's such a stupid word, you know? Hooligan. Very unthreatening word. I don't even know what a hooligan is. I think I could take 20 or 30 of them. Picture these real pale guys in penny loafers and no socks. We're the hooligans. Ow, fucker, come here. Nope, have to catch us. You corner me, I might become a scallywag. I'm an eddywag. There was something in the paper yesterday. Some hooligans caused a rumpus. Not quite the same as Crip and Blood. It's a little more cutting. A little more telling. Blood.
Hooligan.
The Bloods versus the Hooligans.
Hey, man, what you doing, motherfucker? Come here.
Got to catch up.
Here, I'll try you now. There. Catch your skinny, pale ass. How's that?
Oh, he got me in the rumpus. The blood hit me in the rumpus.
You know, Crip, Blood, rumpus. I don't know. You do not have crime like we have, and you should be very grateful. Our crime is like, yesterday a student beheaded his teacher, named best in class. Holding up the head. So I was over here during the riots. And I tell you something, I did not watch the Rodney King trial when I was back home. I saw a special of it here. And I was just amazed, the Rodney King trial. Those cops testifying, man. Do these guys got balls or what, man? These guys carry their balls in a wheelbarrow, man. Excuse me. Man with big balls is here to testify. Place your right testicle on the Bible. This guy, Officer Coon. Come on. Life is too perfect. Officer Coon looks in the camera and actually says about the Rodney King beating tape, actually says, oh, that tape, it's all in how you look at it. Courtroom murmurs, Jesus, what balls. I've never seen balls of this magnitude before. This guy must have a specially fitted uniform in which to place his large testicles. It's all in how you look at it, Officer Coon. Uh-huh. Well, would you care to tell the court how the fuck you're looking at that? Well, yeah, it's how you look at it. For instance, if you play it backwards, you see us help King up and send him on his way. Not guilty. Excuse me. Man with big balls has just been acquitted. I am off to a victory party. You know? And then President Bush comes out and says, not to worry, the justice system is not done with those cops. Yeah. Bush called together a special committee of the surviving members of the Warren Commission to review all the evidence. They come out with the magic baton theory. One baton blow just went out of hand. It's bouncing off his head. It's not me. I'm trying to stop it. Help me. No, you might hit my balls. You're on your own on this. Getting my big balls away from that magical baton right there.
Studios in downtown Los Angeles. This is the weekly wrap-up where we get you caught up on the week's biggest stories. Like us on Facebook. You can go to our Facebook page all week and tell us what stories you want to talk about. I am your host, Ken August. You can also subscribe free at the iTunes store to the weekly wrap-up. I am joined today by two special guests. I'm happy to have our first guy with us, although he is taking some self-portraits right now.
That's right. I'm good looking.
Jason Rohrbacher is first time on the show. How are you, sir?
Good. Good to see you. Glad to have me on.
And but we have our other guest is back by popular demand.
Oh, nice.
Oh, the AC is off. That's right. Now you can hear us, but you can hear us sweat.
It is hotter than Satan's barbecue.
Back by popular demand. The host of the Angry Dorks radio show, as well as the father of the new philosophy, What Would Superman Do?
What's
Ron
up,
Swallow.
Bitches?
How are you, buddy?
I'm awesome.
If you want to get in on the conversation, 800-893-9562. We're going to talk about, it's going to be a whole lot of foreign affairs starting off the show today. Some idiot makes a bad movie, a bad offensive movie, and now Americans all over the world have to wait for Muhammad to tell him to chill out.
Yep.
I hope he's got a Twitter page. Not only does the U.S. Embassy in Egypt get attacked by protesters, but it's got to take a couple of shots from Mitt Romney as well. When it comes to Iran, Israel's Prime Minister Netanyahu is running out of patience, and he's threatening to turn his damn car around. Although not literally, probably more literally, he's going to find Iran's car and blow it up. But close enough. One way around the Pennsylvania tough new voter ID laws, just make sure your son has a show on CNBC. Jim Cramer's dad apparently finds it hard to vote all of a sudden. But first, it was the anniversary, the 11th anniversary of 9/11. It's been 11 years, and although I'd rather not see the footage that's played every year on the anniversary, it is a day to reflect. So before we get into are we safer now, let's listen to about a minute and a half of the president talking at a memorial service on 9/11. This is from the AP.
This week, we mark the 11th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. It's time to remember the nearly 3,000 innocent men, women, and children we lost and the families that they left behind. It's a chance to honor the courage of the first responders who risked their lives on that day and every day since. And it's an opportunity to give thanks for our men and women in uniform who have served and sacrificed, sometimes far from home, to keep our country safe. This anniversary is about them. It's also a time to reflect on just how far we've come as a nation these past 11 years. On that clear September morning, as America watched the towers fall and the Pentagon burn and the records smoldering in a Pennsylvania field, we were filled with questions. Where had the attacks come from, and how would America respond? Would they fundamentally weaken the country we love? Would they change who we are? We took the fight to Al-Qaeda, decimating their leadership, and put them on the path to defeat. And thanks to the courage and skill of our intelligence personnel and armed forces, Osama bin Laden will never threaten America again. Instead of pulling back from the world, we've strengthened our alliances while improving our security here at home. Today,